To stand or fall. To the committee and attendees of SwanCon 40 in Perth, Australia, where this novella and book was completed. Hey, didn't I say I would do this? Part 1. There's a saying, "May you live in interesting times." To begin, it's a curse. Interesting, in this case, uniformly means, "Oh God, death is raining down upon us and we shall all perish, wailing and possibly on fire." If someone wanted to say something nice to you, they wouldn't tell you to live in interesting times. They would say something like, "I wish you eternal happiness," or "May you have peace," or "Live long and prosper," and so on. They wouldn't say, "Live in interesting times." If someone is telling you to live in interesting times, they are basically telling you they want you to die horribly and to suffer terribly before you do. Seriously, they are not your friend. This is a tip I am giving you for free. Second, the curse is almost always ascribed to the Chinese, which is a flat-out lie. As far as anyone can tell, it appeared in English first, but was ascribed to the Chinese, probably due to a combination of casual racism and because someone wanted to be a shithole of a human being but didn't want it to be marked down against them personally. A sort of, "Hey, I'm not saying this. Those terrible Chinese are saying it. I'm just telling you what they said," maneuver. So, not only are they not your friend, they may also be a bigot and passive-aggressive. That said, the Chinese do have a saying from which it is alleged that the bigoted passive-aggressive curse may have been derived, which roughly translated means, "It's better to be a dog in peace than a man in war," which is a maxim which is neither bigoted nor passive-aggressive, and about which I find a lot to agree with. The point is this. My name is Lieutenant Harry Wilson. I've been a man in war for a very long time now. I think it would be preferable to be a dog in peace. I've been working toward that for a while. My problem is, I live in interesting times. My most recent interesting time began when the Chandler, the ship on which I was stationed, skipped into the Khartoum system and promptly blew up the first two other ships it saw. They had it coming. The two ships were attacking the Turbingen, a Colonial Defense Forces ship which had been called into the system to quell a rebellion against the Colonial Union, instigated by Khartoum's prime minister, who really should have known better. But apparently he didn't, and in came the Turbingen, which sent a platoon of soldiers to the planet to escort the prime minister off the planet. Which is when these other two ships skipped in and started using the Turbingen for target practice. I imagine they expected that they would be able to finish the job unmolested. They were not prepared to have the Chandler come at them out of the sun. In reality, we had done no such thing, of course. We had just skipped into the space above Khartoum slightly closer in toward the planet Star than those two ships and the Turbingen, which they were busy attacking. And the fact that we were, from their perspective, hidden in the disk of Khartoum's Star did not give the Chandler any special advantage. The ship's systems would have detected us no later. What gave us an advantage was that they were not expecting us at all. When we showed up, they were giving all their attention to destroying the Turbingen, firing missiles at close range to shatter the ship at its weak points, to end the lives of everyone on the ship and throw the entire Colonial Union into disarray. But coming out of the sun was a nice poetic touch. We had launched our own missiles before our particle beams touched the ship's missiles, detonating all of them before they could smash into the Turbingen. Our missiles jammed themselves into the hulls of the enemy ships, targeted to disrupt power systems and weapons. We didn't worry about the crews. We knew there wouldn't be any, except for a single pilot. From our point of view, the battle was over before it began. The enemy ships, only lightly armored, went up like fireworks. We hailed the Turbingen by standard comms and by BrainPal networking to assess the damage. It was significant. The ship was a loss. It would barely have time to evacuate its crew before its life support systems collapsed. We started making room on the Chandler and sent skip drones back to Phoenix Station for rescue ships and crews. Reports trickled in from the surface of Khartoum. The platoon from the Turbingen, tasked to bring the planet's prime minister into custody, had been shot out of the sky from ground-based defenses. The soldiers who had leapt from the shuttle to escape its destruction had been picked off by the same defense. Only two soldiers had escaped unharmed, but between them they destroyed the defense installation, staffed with RA soldiers aligned with Equilibrium, the group who had wreaked so much havoc on the Colonial Union and the Conclave. They captured two of the RA from the ground installation, including the commander. Then they finished their original mission and brought back the Prime Minister of Khartoum. Someone was going to have to interrogate them all. For the two RA, that someone was me. I entered the room where the RA prisoner of war had been waiting for me. The RA had not been shackled, but a shock collar had been placed around his neck. Any motion quicker than a very casual and deliberate movement would generate a jolt, and the faster the movement, the more powerful the jolt. The RA did not move very much. He sat in a chair very badly designed for his physiology, but no better chair was to be had. It was positioned at a table. On the opposite side of the table stood another chair. I sat in the chair, reached out, and placed a speaker on the table. "Commander Tivan," I said, and my words were translated by the speaker. "My name is Harry Wilson. I am a lieutenant in the Colonial Defense Forces. I would like to speak to you, if you don't mind. You may answer in your own language. My brain pal will translate for me."
"You humans," Tivan said after a moment, "the way you speak, as if you are asking for permission when you are making demands."
"You could choose not to speak to me," I said. Tivan motioned to the collar around his neck.
"I do not think that would go very well for me."
A fair point. I pushed up from the chair and walked over to Tivan, who did not flinch. "If you will permit me, I will remove your collar."
"Why would you do that?"
"As a token of good faith," I said. "And also, so if you choose not to speak to me, you will not have to fear punishment." Tivan craned his neck to allow me access to his collar. I removed it, unlocking it via a command from my brain pal. I set the collar on the table and then returned to my seat. "Now, where were we?" I said. "Oh, that's right. I wanted to speak to you."
"Lieutenant."
Tivan trailed off.
"Wilson." "Thank you, Lieutenant. May I be candid with you?"
"I hope you will."
"While I do not wish to suggest I do not appreciate you removing this instrument of torture from my neck, allow me to note that the act is hollow. And not only hollow, it is, in fact, disingenuous."
"How so, Commander?" Tivan motioned around him.
"You have removed the shock collar, but I am still here in your ship. I have no doubt that on the other side of this door is another CDF soldier like yourself, with a weapon or another implement of torture. There is no escape for me, and no assurance that aside from this immediate moment, I will not be punished or even killed for not speaking with you."
I smiled. "You are correct that there is someone on the other side of this door, Commander. It's not another CDF soldier, however. It's just my friend, Hart Schmidt, who is a diplomat, not a killer or a torturer. He's on the other side of the door primarily because he's running a recording device. An unnecessary thing, as I am also recording this conversation with my brain pal."
"You're not worried about me trying to kill you and escaping?"
Tivan said. "Not really, no," I said. "I mean, I am a CDF soldier. You may know from your own experience that we are genetically engineered to be faster and stronger than unmodified humans. With all due respect to your own prowess, Commander, if you attempted to kill me, you would be in for a fight."
"And if I did kill you?"
"Well, the door is locked," I said, "which kind of puts a damper on your whole escape plan." Tivan did the RA equivalent of a laugh.
"So you're not afraid of me?"
"No," I said. "But I don't want you to be afraid of me either."
"I'm not," Tivan said. "The rest of your species I am afraid of, and of what might happen to me if I don't speak to you now."
"Commander, allow me to be as candid with you as you have been with me."
"All right, Lieutenant."
"You are a prisoner of the Colonial Defense Forces. You are, in point of fact, a prisoner of war. You were captured having taken up arms against us. You, either directly or by the orders you gave, killed many of our soldiers. I will not torture you, nor will I kill you, nor will you be tortured or killed while you are on this ship. But you have to know that the rest of your life is going to be spent with us. I motioned around. And in a room not much larger than this one.
You are not inspiring me to be forthcoming, Lieutenant.
I can understand that, but I'm not finished, I said. As I said, the rest of your life is very likely to be as our prisoner, in a room about this size. But there is another option.
Talk to you.
Yes, I agreed. Talk to me. Tell me everything you know about Equilibrium and its plans. Tell me how you got 10 human colonies to agree to rebel against the Colonial Union. Tell me what the endgame is for your organization. Tell me all of it, start to finish, and leave nothing out.
In return for what?
In return for your freedom.
Oh, Lieutenant,
Tavan said.
You can't possibly expect me to believe it's within your power to offer that.
It's not. As you've implicitly noted, I'm just a lieutenant. But this offer doesn't come from me. It comes from the highest levels of both the Colonial Defense Forces and the Colonial Union's civilian government. Disclose everything, and when this is all over, whatever this is, whenever it's over, you'll be handed over to the RAE government. What they do to you is another kettle of fish, assuming that they have something to do with Equilibrium at all. That said, if you're especially forthcoming, we can make an effort to have it seem like we didn't know what an excellent intelligence asset you were. That we thought you were just some common military commander.
But I am, Tavan said. The scope of my orders were limited and focused on this mission.
I nodded. Yeah, we were pretty sure you were going to try that, I said. And who could blame you? There's no percentage for you letting on any more than you had to. But we know something you don't think we know, Commander.
What is that, Lieutenant?
Commander, does this ship seem familiar to you in any way?
No,
Tavan said.
Why should it?
No reason, I said. Except for the small detail that you've been on it before.
I don't believe so.
Oh, believe it, I said, and then looked up toward the ceiling. Rafe, have you been listening in?
You know I have,
said a new voice from the speaker. A translation in a slightly different voice to differentiate it from my translation followed almost immediately afterward. Okay, good, I said, and looked back to Tavan. Commander Tavan, I would like to introduce you to Rafe Daqueen, our pilot. Or more accurately, I would like to reintroduce you, as the two of you have met before.
I don't understand,
Tavan said. You don't remember me? Daqueen said. I'm hurt, Commander. Because I remember you very well. I remember you threatening to blow my ship out of the sky. I remember you shooting my captain and first officer. I remember you talking with Secretary Ocampo about the best way to murder my entire crew.
Oh, yes, Commander. I have a whole heap of memories with you in them.
Tavan said nothing to this.
Ah, I said.
See, now you're remembering after all. This is the Chandler, Commander. The ship you took. And the ship you lost. Well, maybe not you specifically, but Equilibrium. We know you were on it, and we know you're not just some field commander. No, sir. You're a key member of the Equilibrium military. And your presence on Khartoum leading the forces that shot our people out of the sky isn't just luck of the assignment draw. You're here for a reason.
How is it that you're here?
Tavan asked me. How do you mean?
Your ship thwarted the attack on the CDF ship that responded to the Khartoum rebellion,
Tavan said.
How did you know? How did you get here to stop it?
We had inside intelligence.
From whom?
From whom do you think? I said.
I'll give you a hint, Daqueen said. It's the guy I stole from you when I made a break for it.
Secretary Ocampo has been very forthcoming, I said. When Khartoum declared its independence, he suggested to us that there was a good chance that there might be a trap laid for any ship that responded. The Chandler happened to be near skip distance, and the Colonial Union didn't want to inflame things by sending a large contingent of CDF ships. So we got the call. "Thanks for grafting those weapon systems back onto the ship," Doc Wien said. "They came in handy."
"Secretary Ocampo," Tavan said. "No doubt forthcoming because you've put his brain into an isolation chamber."
"You're not really going to go there, are you?" Doc Wien said. "Because I have news for you, pal. You don't have much high ground to stand on with that one."
"If you have Ocampo, you don't need me," Tavan said to me. "Ocampo has far more operational knowledge than I ever did. He was a primary architect of our plans."
"We know," I said. "We have all his records. The thing is, we also know you know we have all his records. You have to have assumed that once Rafe absconded with the secretary, which means Equilibrium can't use them anymore. You have a new game plan, one that's being carried out on an accelerated schedule. Ocampo can make educated guesses, but we need more than educated guesses at this point."
"I'm captured," Tavan said. "They'll know to change their plans."
"You're not captured," I said. "You're dead. At least that's what they'll think. You and every other array obliterated beyond identification and before identification. And you died completing your objective of luring the Colonial Union into a trap and making it look like Khartoum was responsible for the attack." That was a nice touch, by the way. Tavan was silent again. "That's our communication plan. Everything that's coming out of us is pinning it on the Khartoum government. So far as Equilibrium knows, it's still game on for the latest plan. We'd like you to tell us the plan."
"And if I refuse?"
"Then you better get used to walls," Doc Queen said. "Rafe, why don't you sign out for a bit?" I said. Doc Queen signed out.
"You're not the first RA I've ever met," I said to Tavan, after Doc Queen had departed.
"I'm sure you've killed many in your time," Tavan said.
"That's not what I meant," I said. "I mean that I knew another RA as a person, a scientist named Kainan Suen Su. He, like you, was captured by us. I was assigned to him."
"To guide him?"
"No, to assist him. We worked on several projects together with him as the lead and me following his direction."
"He was a traitor then."
"I don't know that he would disagree with you," I said. "He was aware that in helping us, his knowledge could be used against the RA. Nevertheless, he did help, and in the course of time, he also became a friend. He was one of the most remarkable people I've ever met. I was honored to have known him."
"What happened to him?"
"He died."
"How?"
"A soldier, who was also his friend, killed him at his request."
"Why did he ask to die?"
"Because he was dying anyway," I said. "We'd introduced a poison into his blood, and the daily antidote he was given was increasingly less effective. He asked his friend to end his suffering."
"The suffering you had imposed on him in the first place?"
"Yes."
"Lieutenant, if there is a point to this discussion of yours, I'm afraid it has entirely escaped me."
"Kainan was an enemy who became a friend," I said. "And despite the terrible thing we had done to him, and yes, it was terrible, he still chose to find friendship among us. I've never forgotten that."
"I do not think we will be friends, I'm afraid."
"I'm not asking for that, Commander," I said. "My point in telling you this is to let you know that, at the very least, I don't see you merely as an enemy."
"You will understand, Lieutenant, if I'm not convinced that this fact does anything for me at all."
"Of course." I stood up. "Just understand that it can, if you want it to. In the meantime, give consideration to what I've asked for. Let me know when you're ready to talk." I started for the door.
"Aren't you going to put that back on me?"
Tavan said, pointing to the shock collar on the table.
"You can put it back on if you want," I said.
"But I wouldn't if I were you." I opened the door, leaving Tavan to stare at the collar on the table.
"Are you going to kill us?"
Specialist Ketrin Seilau asked me. The two of us were in the same room I had previously been in with Tavan. The room had been reset. Lau was not wearing the shock collar. He had never been given one.
Lieutenant Lee promised you that we wouldn't, if her report to me is accurate, I said.
That was her. You are someone new.
Do you think we're going to kill you, Ketrin? I asked.
Humans aren't well known for being kind to their enemies, Lau said.
No, I suppose not, I admitted. No, Specialist Lau, we're not planning to kill you or Commander Tavan. I watched as relief spilled over the RA's body. In fact, what we're hoping to do after all of this is done is return you to your government.
When?
I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to be a while, I said. We have to get to the end of this current conflict. In the meantime, you're going to be our guest.
You mean prisoner?
Well, yes, I said. But within that framework, there's a lot of latitude for how you are treated.
I don't know anything important, Lau said. I'm a specialist. I was only told specific things about my own job.
We know that you don't know anything above your pay grade, I said. We don't expect you to know the secret plans of Equilibrium.
Then what can I tell you that I didn't already tell your Lieutenant Lee?
I'm interested not so much in what you know as I am in what you've heard. Rumors and speculation and things like that. We're both soldiers, Ketrin. Although we're different species, I think we probably share one thing in common. Our jobs are boring most of the time, so we spend a lot of time bullshitting with our friends. I'm interested in the bullshit.
I don't know that word, but I think I know what it means.
Bullshit? Yes, I think you probably do. I'm also interested in you, Ketrin.
How so?
Your experience with Equilibrium, I said. Beginning with the very simple question of, how did you get involved with them in the first place?
Oh, that's your fault, Lau said. Humans, not you specifically. Our wars with you went poorly for us, particularly after the Obin, who had been our allies, turned on us. When that happened, we lost planets and lost power, and our military shrank. Many former soldiers were out of work. I was one of them.
There are other lines of work,
Lieutenant. When we lost planets, we had an influx of people to our remaining worlds. There were no jobs to be had. You and the Oban didn't just shrink our military. You killed our economy. I'm originally from a colony planet named Fuig. We don't have that planet anymore. I was relocated to Bolni. Jobs there mostly went to native Bolnians.
Got it.
So when I was approached by a former commander of mine about Equilibrium, I didn't spend any time thinking about it. I was being offered a job and a chance to use my skills. The pay was excellent, and I got to leave Bolni, which I hated.
I understand that.
If you are planning to attack any planet of ours, let me suggest Bolni first.
I grinned. It's not on our agenda at the moment, but I'll keep it in mind. How long have you been with the Equilibrium?
I don't know your time measurements.
Tell me in your years. I'll make the adjustments.
About 6 years, then.
Which is about 5 of ours. Which is a long time.
It was steady work.
Right, I said. My point is that we only started learning about Equilibrium very recently. It's a long time for your organization to be flying under our radar.
Maybe you're not very good at intelligence.
Oh, that might be it, I allowed. But I like to think there's something more to it than that. Specialist Lau did the RA equivalent of a shrug.
The organization was always small and focused and decentralized until very recently. For the first couple of years, I didn't even know there was a larger organization. I only worked with my team.
So you thought you were a mercenary?
Yes.
Being a mercenary didn't bother you?
I liked being able to eat. And like I said, I didn't have very many other options.
So you thought you were a mercenary, but then you found out about the rest of Equilibrium.
Yes.
No thoughts about your team suddenly being made part of a larger organization?
Not really, Lau said. Mercenary companies are like any other company. Sometimes they work with other companies. Sometimes they merge with them. I was being paid on time and working with the same group of people, so it was all the same to me.
And what about the philosophical aims of the Equilibrium? What did you think about them?
I was fine with them. I'm still fine with them. Lieutenant, the Colonial Union is our enemy, and the Conclave won't allow us to colonize, even on the planets we lost and want to retake. The two of you have made life very difficult for us. I don't mind returning the favor.
All right.
But you have to understand that at the level I work at, we don't really get into the philosophy of the organization. Do you, sir? Do you spend a lot of time thinking about the ethics and philosophy of the Colonial Union and what it does?
Actually, I do, I said, and smiled. But overthinking things is a hobby of mine. I'm the first to admit I'm weird.
My job was to manage communications, Lau said. I spent most of my time thinking about my immediate tasks and the people I was working with. I'm not a great thinker, Lieutenant.
This mission, I said. It was with the same group you've been with since the beginning?
No. The team I was part of was mostly wiped out when the Chandler attacked Equilibrium headquarters. I survived because I had been temporarily assigned to another team to train some new recruits. After that attack, I stayed with that team, which Commander Tavan led. That's the team you obliterated.
I'm sorry for the loss of your friends.
Thank you. It's kind of you to say, even if I doubt you're entirely sincere.
I have to say, you're more forthcoming than Commander Tavan has been.
I have a lot fewer secrets to keep, Lau said, and I don't want to die.
I know Tavan was not happy with you that you were willing to talk with us, that he tried to attack you to shut you up.
Like I said, he has more secrets to keep than I do.
I suspect he's unhappy with the level of loyalty you're showing. Lau barked out a ray laugh at this.
You said it yourself, Lieutenant. I'm a mercenary. I have been since the moment Equilibrium hired me. Equilibrium pays well, but right now, I can't spend a single coin of what they pay me. You, on the other hand, can kill me. I value my life more than all the money in the world.
That's a very practical point of view, Ketron.
I was hoping you might appreciate it, Lieutenant.
I do, very much. And I think you'll find that my superiors will appreciate it, too.
I was hoping that you would say that. Remember, there's only so much I know. I won't withhold anything, but there are limits to my knowledge.
Like I said, I'm interested in other things from you than I am from Commander Tavan. I think you'll be very useful.
Then let's get to work, Lau said. I do have one request for the moment.
What is it?
Lunch?
Do you know who I am?
Masahiko Okada asked, with just the right amount of outrage to his voice. The same room again, but a slightly different cast of characters. Okada was sitting at the table. I was standing against the wall near the door. The question was not directed at me, but at the person sitting directly across from him.
You're Masahiko Okada, said Ode Obumwe, Colonial Union ambassador, and also my boss.
Precisely, Okada said. And you know my position?
Yes, I do, Obumwe said. You're a Colonial Union prisoner of war.
I'm Prime Minister of Khartoum,
Okada said, voice shaking. No, Obumwe said. No, you are not. You may have been, but that was before you acted in open rebellion against the Colonial Union. That was before you ordered ships to attack a Colonial Defense Forces vessel. That was before you ordered ground-based weapons to blast individual CDF soldiers out of the sky. Whatever you were before, Mr. Okada, right now you are a traitor and a murderer and a prisoner of war. Nothing more than that.
I don't know what you're talking about, Okada said. We declared independence from the Colonial Union, that's all.
You declared independence from the Colonial Union and then hid in a secret location, Obumwe said, which surely suggests you knew the Colonial Union would respond to your independence and would send forces to retrieve you. And when we did, we were attacked. Not by Khartoumians, Mr. Okada, by others entirely.
I didn't authorize any attack.
Obumwe sighed audibly at this.
I want to speak to Secretary of State Galeano. When she finds out what you and your Colonial Defense Force stooges have done to me, you'll be lucky just to be fired.
Mr. Okada.
Prime Minister Okada.
Mr. Okada,
Obumwe repeated,
and I could see the mottled rage rising up Okada's neck and face.
"You appear to be under the impression that by sheer force of personality you will change your circumstances at the moment, that you will, by issuing demands in that stentorian campaign voice of yours, cow me to your will. You misunderstand my role here, Mr. Okada. I am not the one keeping you from returning to your previous exalted status. I am the one that is keeping you from being turned into a floating brain in a transparent column of nutrient broth."
The mottled flush of Okada's cheeks disappeared, followed by something rather paler.
"Excuse me," he said.
"You heard me, Mr. Okada," Obumwe said. "You declared your planet independent of the Colonial Union, which was enough to have you labeled a traitor. For that alone, you would be looking at the rest of your life in a Colonial Union prison if they didn't simply decide to execute you. But then you also attacked Colonial Defense Forces, and the CDF doesn't forgive the deaths of its people. It especially won't forgive them when it's clear that you, the Prime Minister of an entire planet, planned and coordinated the attack with enemies of the Colonial Union. The CDF won't kill you for that, Mr. Okada. What they will do is strip your brain out of your head and let it lie in isolation. Horrible, endless isolation. Until you tell them every single thing you know. And then, when you're done, you'll be sent back into that endless isolation." Okada's eyes flickered up to me. I stared back at him, impassive. I knew what my role in the room was, which was to be the silent avatar of every horrible thing the Colonial Defense Forces would do to Okada. It would be an inappropriate time for me to note my own personal objection to the brain removal tactic, which I found frankly criminal. "The only reason you haven't already been prepared for this operation is because I, as a courtesy owed to your former station, am offering you a choice," Obumwe continued. "Tell me everything you know, now. No hesitation, no omission, no lies. Start with your deal with Equilibrium. Share it all, and you will stay you. Or don't."
"I didn't authorize that attack,"
Okada began. Obumwe shoved up from her seat, a look of genuine disgust on her face.
"Wait!"
Okada held up a hand, imploringly. Obumwe paused.
"We had a deal with Equilibrium, yes, but it was only for defense, if and only if the Colonial Union attacked Khartoum itself. A major attack. A single CDF ship in orbit wouldn't have triggered it."
"But you hid yourself," I said. "You and your cabinet."
"We're not stupid," Okada spat at me. "We knew you would come for us. We hid to delay you finding us, and to keep you from destroying infrastructure and creating civilian casualties when you went looking for us."
He turned back to Obumwe.
"We always knew we were going to be captured. We knew you would send a single ship for us because we all know how the Colonial Union like to imply that it only takes a single ship to deal with any internal problem. We wanted to be captured. Our plan was civil disobedience, to act as an inspiration for the other colony worlds who were planning to declare their independence as well."
"Civil disobedience doesn't usually include calling in outside forces to act as muscle," I said.
"It's one thing for me and my cabinet to participate in civil disobedience," Okada said. "It's another thing to leave 360 million people defenseless against the Colonial Union. Our deal with Equilibrium was defense and deterrence, not aggression."
"And yet they attacked anyway," Obumwe said, sitting down again.
"Not on my orders,"
Okada said.
"The first I knew of it was when your soldiers blasted their way into our bunker and dragged me out."
Obumwe looked at me. I shrugged.
"I am telling the truth," Okada protested. "I don't want my brain in a goddamn tube, all right? I was misled by Equilibrium, by Commander Tavan. He told me his role was deterrence only. Encouraged us to declare independence before the other colonies to set the example, and to make them aware that Equilibrium would protect them like it was protecting us. To encourage every colony to break free of the Colonial Union."
"So why did Commander Tavan do it?" Obumwe asked. "Why did he attack?"
"Why don't you ask him?"
We have, and we will again. But right now I'm asking you. Speculate.
Okada laughed bitterly.
Obviously, because whatever plans Equilibrium has, they deviate substantially from our own. What they are, I cannot even begin to tell you. All I know, Ambassador, is that I was used. I was used. My government was used. My planet was used. And now all of us are going to pay for it.
Abomwe stood up again, less dramatically this time.
What's going to happen now?
Okada asked.
We'll make sure you stay intact, Abomwe said.
That's not what I meant. I meant what's going to happen to Khartoum. What is the Colonial Union going to do to my planet, to my people?
I don't know, Minister Okada, Abomwe said.
I wondered if he noticed that she gave him his honorific the one time he gave thought to those he was supposed to represent, and not just himself.
We don't have a lot of time, Abomwe said to her current brain trust, which at the moment was Hilary Drollett, her assistant, Neva Bala, the captain of the Chandler, my friend Hart Schmidt, and me. All of us were crammed into that same small room.
It won't be long before Equilibrium discovers that their attack has failed.
I don't think it did, I said.
How do you figure? Bala said to me. The Turbigan isn't entirely destroyed. The two ships attacking it were. The RA attack on our soldiers was likewise countered, and the RA eliminated, except for our two prisoners. And Khartoum isn't independent. If anything, it's just signed up for more direct Colonial Union oversight. There are 20 CDF ships on the way here now to make that point.
I pointed at her for emphasis. But see, that's the victory condition.
Explain yourself, Lieutenant, Abomwe said to me.
What does Equilibrium want? I asked the room. It wants to destabilize and destroy the Colonial Union. And the Conclave, too, but let's focus on us for a minute.
Right, Bala said. And they failed. Khartoum is still in the Colonial Union. It didn't destroy the Colonial Union.
It's not just destroy. It's also destabilize, I said. The CDF is sending ships, not just to deal with the Turbigan's survivors, but to exert control over a rebellious planet. You said 20 ships, Captain?
That's right.
When was the last time the Colonial Union committed that number of CDF ships to a colonial world that wasn't directly under attack by another species?
You're the one with the computer in your head, Bala said. You tell us.
It hasn't happened in over a century, I said.
We've never had the level of uprisings we're seeing now, Hart said to me.
He looked around the room.
Harry and I talked to Lieutenant Lee, who led that Turbigan platoon to get the Prime Minister. She said that all of her previous recent missions were either stopping rebellions on Colonial Union planets or containing them if they'd already begun. That's new. That's different.
This goes to my point, I said. The Colonial Union is already destabilizing. Bringing in 20 ships won't help.
I don't know about that, Bala said.
I think no one on Khartoum is going to start anything anytime soon.
But the audience here isn't just Khartoum, Abomwe said to Bala, and then looked at me. That's what you're going to say next, isn't it?
Yes, I said, because it's not. We know that Khartoum was one of 10 colony worlds that were going to jointly announce their independence. Equilibrium got them to jump the gun for its own purposes. I think part of that purpose was to invoke an outsized military response on our part.
But that would just intimidate the other colonies, Bala said,
or anger them. Hart said. Or inspire them to stick to their guns, as it were, I said.
Stick to their guns is a curious phrase to use, Bala said, because they don't have any. The Colonial Union has all the weaponry on its side. Whether they're inspired or angry or both, the colonies can't miss the Colonial Union's message that the party's over.
I glanced over to Abomwe.
Unless Equilibrium has been talking to these other colonies as well, she said.
Right, I said. Equilibrium is small, so it has to maximize its impact. It has to go for gestures that make a splash. It's something they learned from us.
How so?
Abumwe asked.
Like when we fought the Conclave over Roanoke, I said. It's 400 alien races, all with their own military reach. We couldn't possibly take them on ship to ship. So when we wanted to destroy it, we lured them into a trap we devised, destroyed their grand fleet by subterfuge, and waited for the fallout to take down the Conclave.
There is the minor detail that the plan didn't work, Bala said. The Conclave survived.
But the Conclave wasn't the same after that, I pointed out. Before Roanoke, the Conclave was this dauntingly large force that was impossible to fight. After Roanoke, there was an open rebellion and there was the first assassination attempt on General Gao, their leader. Those tensions never went away and Gao was, in fact, later assassinated. We were there for it. You can lay out a path from Roanoke to Gao's death. The Conclave today is what the Colonial Union made it, which also means, in some way, the Colonial Union helped create the conditions that make equilibrium possible.
And now equilibrium is shaping the Colonial Union, Abumwe said.
It's certainly making the effort, yes.
There is some irony to that.
I nodded at this. And the thing we have to remember is that it's doing it for its own purposes. I pointed in the direction of the very small room in which we were currently keeping Khartoum's prime minister. Okada and his government got sold a bill of goods by Equilibrium, which attacked us. But it's not Equilibrium who is being punished, it's Khartoum.
When you lay down with dogs, you get fleas, Hart said.
Yes, I'm not defending Okada's act. He and the planet wouldn't be in the position they are today if he and his government hadn't let Equilibrium through the door. But Equilibrium got what it wanted out of the exchange. More Colonial Union oversight means more resentment of the Colonial Union, not just here, but everywhere that finds out about it.
The Colonial Union holds a virtual monopoly on information, Bala said.
It did, I agreed. It doesn't anymore. And leaving aside the general philosophical issue with a single source bottlenecking every bit of communication for its own purposes, that presents its own problems.
Like Equilibrium creating its own version of events here on Khartoum and presenting it to the other colonies, Abumwe said.
Right again, I said.
Which goes back again to my point about Equilibrium maximizing its efforts.
It doesn't take a lot for them to leverage mistrust of the Colonial Union into the appearance of being a fair dealer to the colonial worlds.
Pointed to Abumwe. You said we don't have much time?
I think it's more correct to say that we're already out of time. Equilibrium is almost certainly already out there selling its version of events, and when it shows a feed of all our ships floating above the surface of Khartoum, that's just going to act as confirmation to the rebellious colonies.
How do we know about the rebellious colonies? Bala asked.
The Colonial Union is not entirely without friends on the colony worlds, Abumwe said, or in their governments. We have had people feeding us information for a while now.
And we never did anything on it? We let it get to this point?
With the politics of the colony worlds, the Colonial Union prefers to do things as quietly as possible until they can't be handled quietly anymore. Abumwe shrugged.
It worked before, for decades. The Colonial Union is resistant to change. And at the top, there's the belief that things can still be managed quietly, that we will be able to control the actions of the colonies.
Well, that's not working out very well at this point, Ambassador, Bala said.
No, it isn't, Abumwe agreed.
And we knew nothing about Equilibrium's involvement?
Remember that one of the prime movers of Equilibrium turned out to be a highly placed member of our State Department, I said to Bala. It's entirely possible that we thought we knew about the independence movements on the colony worlds was based on highly edited information. And once Ocampo was retaken, Equilibrium would naturally change tactics. That would be my guess, anyway. Bala turned to me.
Have you always had this sort of paranoid mind?
I smiled, Captain. The problem is not that I'm paranoid. The problem is that the universe keeps justifying my paranoia.
Abumwe turned her attention back to me.
So, your analysis, paranoid or otherwise, is that this encounter was a success for Equilibrium.
Yes, I said. It wasn't perfect. I think they would have liked to have destroyed the Turbingen,
killed everyone aboard, made it look like the Khartoumian government was entirely responsible for it all, and have us none the wiser for it. But as it is, they'll be able to sell their version to people who are receptive to hear it. Equilibrium's been working on a strategy of making us look deceptive and dissembling for a while now. It works because we are, in fact, deceptive and dissembling.
What's their next step, then? Hart asked. I think that may be the lieutenant's point, Abumwe said. They don't have to have a next step. They just have to wait for us to do what we always do, the way we always do it.
I nodded. Why do the work to destabilize us when we'll do it for ourselves?
But there still has to be a point to it, Bala said to Abumwe.
She turned to me.
Look, Lieutenant, I understand that you are deeply enthusiastic about this convoluted web of actions that you're spinning. I'm not going to say that it's wrong, but Equilibrium isn't doing this just for the fun of it. They're not nihilists. There has to be a point. There has to be a plan. This has to lead to something.
It leads to the end of all things, I said. Or less dramatically, to either or both the Colonial Union and the Conclave fracturing, and the return of every species in our local slice of space being constantly at war with each other.
I still don't know why anyone would want that, Hart said.
Because it worked really well for some people, I said. Let's not lie, Hart. It worked really well for us, for humans, and more specifically for the Colonial Union, a system of government stable for centuries, predicated on killing the shit out of everyone else and taking their land. That's practically the modus operandi of every successful human civilization to date. No wonder some of us wanted to return to it, even at the risk of destroying the Colonial Union itself. Because if we got back, we'd be meaner than ever before.
Unless we weren't, and were just wiped out instead.
Well, there is that. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. But you also have to make sure that what's inside the egg makes it to the pan.
Don't know what that means, Hart said.
It means destroying the Colonial Union isn't a trivial act for the survival of the human race, I said. We might not have time to think up something new before we're wiped out.
That's what I said, Hart pointed out,
more compactly.
Whether or not it leads to the end of all things is not my concern right now, Bala said. My concern is the next specific thing that Equilibrium is going to do or wants to have happen.
I think it's something to do with the planets that are planning to announce their independence, I said.
I agree, Abumwe said.
Okay, that's great, Bala said.
What exactly?
I don't know, I said.
Isn't that why you questioned those Array and the Prime Minister to find those things out?
We found out a lot, I said. Just not that.
Maybe you should try again?
You might be right, I said. Specifically, I want to try another pass at Commander Tavan.
You going to still try to be his friend? Abumwe asked. I don't see that being a very effective tactic.
The point of the first session wasn't to make him my friend. It was to make him not fear me.
And what do you plan to do now? Bala asked.
I'm going to introduce him to something he actually might fear, I said.
I don't know what these are,
Commander Tavan said when I handed him a printout. We were back in the same room. I was beginning to get tired of the room, to be entirely honest about it. That's a printout of targets the Colonial Defense Forces are planning to hit sometime very soon, I said. Tavan handed it back.
I don't read your language, and I'm not sure why you would want to show me confidential information in any event.
Because, in a way, you were the inspiration for the list, I said, and handed him another printout. Here, this one might be more readable for you. Tavan took the list and read it. He read it a second time. Then he set the printout on the table between us.
I don't understand, he said to me.
It's simple enough, I said. You are Array. The Equilibrium crew who you commanded were all Array. The crew which you commanded, which took the Chandler and killed its crew, were Array. The base from which Equilibrium operated until Rafe shot it up and rendered it unusable was formerly an Array military base until your species abandoned it and the system it was in. You are seeing a pattern here, I trust.
It's a false pattern.
It could be, I admitted. However, the top brass of the Colonial Defense Force doesn't think so. They're pretty well convinced at this point that the RA, your government, is actively involved with Equilibrium. It's not the only one, to be sure. We have enough evidence of that. But time and again, we see RA participation in ways we don't see other species participating. It is, shall we say, statistically significant.
You and the Conclave drove millions of us out of work and out of our homes, Tavan said. Of course you will see lots of us involved in Equilibrium.
I smiled.
It might interest you to know that's the very rationale Specialist Lau gave for joining up. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying it's not an argument that's going to convince the CDF that your government isn't offering material assistance to Equilibrium.
I pointed to the printout.
So the CDF has decided to act. Equilibrium is difficult to find. It's designed to be that way, I know. So we've decided to stop looking and to go straight to the source, as it were. Those are the first wave targets we're going to hit on the RAE worlds. Mostly military and industrial sites, as you can see, but also shipping and processing sites. The plan is to make it more difficult for you to equip and assist Equilibrium.
You'll also destroy our infrastructure and cause millions to starve.
Our analysts agree with the first. Not so much to the second. That will happen with the second wave of targets, however, if Equilibrium keeps up its attacks.
If Equilibrium keeps hitting you after your first set of targets, then it should be obvious that the RA are not equipping us.
Like I said, we know the RA aren't the only ones chipping in with Equilibrium, but we think it's the primary one. And aside from the value of snapping off that primary supply line, we think it sends a fine warning to everyone else. You may be using Equilibrium to destroy the Colonial Union, but we're still strong enough to take you down with us.
When will you do this?
Well, the thinking is, there's no reason to wait, I said. The operation is in motion as we speak. In fact, some of the ships that we were being tasked here at Khartoum are being reassigned to this. It's become the CDF's top priority now.
It's genocide.
I think you might be surprised at how little you and I differ in this opinion, Commander Tavan. But I have to tell you that I'm not the one you need to make that argument to. This is a discussion that's taking place far above either of our heads.
No,
Tavan said.
You wouldn't have come to me with this if there was nothing you wanted from me.
I do have something I want from you, I agreed. I want you to tell me Equilibrium's strategy for Khartoum and the other colonies. Tell me and convince me that this is something we can better direct our attention to than that list of targets. I pointed to the printout again. You have no reason to trust me, but I will make you this promise regardless. Help me convince them, and I will do everything I can to shift their focus.
What can you do? Tavan said. You're a lieutenant.
I am, I said. But I am an unusually well-placed lieutenant. Tavan was silent, and I suspect, skeptical.
Commander, I said, let me be clear. The Colonial Defense Forces has made a decision. It's going to hit something, and it's going to hit something hard. And what it's going to hit is whatever is directly in front of it. Right now, that's the RA planets.
You know that the CDF is weaker than it used to be, but the RA are weaker even than that. And when the CDF hits your people, it's going to knock them back as close to the Stone Age as possible. A lot of your people are going to suffer. The only way this doesn't happen, the only way, Commander, is if we have something else to hit instead. Give me something else they can hit. Help me, Commander. An hour later, I emerged from the room. Hart was waiting for me, along with a pair of CDF soldiers waiting to escort Tavan back to the brig.
You got everything you needed?
He asked. What, you weren't out here recording? After you mocked me for it the last time, I decided there were other things I could be doing with my time.
Yes.
I think I got everything I needed. I nodded to the soldiers who entered the room. I motioned to Hart to walk with me.
He didn't catch on?
That I was bluffing about the RA targets? No. I sold it well enough. It helps that it was exactly the sort of thing the CDF would do.
So now what?
So now we go tell Obumwe, I said.
And then, I suspect, we head back to Phoenix Station and tell a whole bunch of other people. And then maybe find a hole to hide in.
Why? I thought Tavan told you what Equilibrium is planning.
He did, I said.
Well,
and? I stopped and turned to look at my friend.
And if everything he told me is true, Hart, then we're all kind of magnificently fucked.
I started walking again. Hart stayed stationary, staring at me as I walked away.